step sounds in a game is a sample being repeated, and then people start to make little variations in pitch of this sample, and then and it became increasingly sophisticated with middleware, and so a whole set of software emerged, a type of software, game audio middleware, that serves only the purpose of making sound, usually sample-based sounds, pleasurable to use in an interactive context, and there are many different strategies to do that, layering and adaptive mixing and adaptive even spectral shaping and stuff like that, and of course generative approaches as well are coming in, and that's so interesting.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the second part of my conversation with Dr. Daniel Hoog.
Like you said, it's better to have something that grows on you rather than something that blows you away. Because if you hear that sound that blows you away 15 times in, 10 minutes, it's not gonna feel so great anymore.
Yes, exactly. So, can wear thin pretty quickly. Yeah, it's like, it's like watching an Avenger movie, right? So it's like the problem may be of too much big hulks hitting. In the first time, it's impressive, and you go like, wow. And then the second and third time. But the tenth time is going to be very annoying.
That is very true. Yeah. Actually, I kind of liken that to the Matrix movies. Mm-hmm. And the reason I do is because the first concept of that was so incredible. And the first movie was awesome. And then as they progressed, you just got more and more used to it. And it was less and less impressive.
I am. Absolutely. That's true. Yes.
Which is unfortunate, but I guess that's how the human brain works.
That's true. Yeah. And yeah, that would be a whole other box can of worms to open. But
I know. Yeah.
It's something that maybe just as an association, when I was still teaching game sound designers, which I'm not doing anymore because I'm now teaching professional sound designers, interaction design. But when I was teaching game designers about sound design, one thing that we always discussed and analyzed was how franchises work sonically. So, and in games, this is even a bigger thing than in movies, because the franchise, the X, the 10-9, the sequence, like Mario, Super Mario 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then sometimes they stop counting and put like Odyssey and whatnot.
All of the sounds must progress and be similar and have the same brand so that you recognize what game you're playing.
Exactly, right.
Yeah.
And that's where we can learn so much from. I mean, game sound, I always say it has taught me probably the most and about interactive or use-oriented sound design, although you would not expect it from there. It's not product sound design. It has nothing to do with cars or appliances or whatever, but it's the basic mechanisms. It's about interaction. It's about virtual things, but they could be real things that you use, you have to understand, you have to like as well, because you want to play the game in a positive sense. And also they should not wear thin, they should be impressive if needed, and so on. So and also the act of repetition. Game engines always have been good, or game sound always had to struggle with the problem of repetition. Step sounds in a game is a sample being repeated, and then people start to make little variations in pitch of this sample, and it became increasingly sophisticated with middleware, and so a whole set of software emerged, a type of software, game audio middleware, that serves only the purpose of making sound, usually sample-based sounds, pleasurable to use in an interactive context, and there are many different strategies to do that, layering and adaptive mixing and adaptive, even spectral shaping and stuff like that. And of course, generative approaches as well are coming in. And that's so interesting. And I think some of these techniques can and should be used also in the world of products and environments. And they are in some places. But I think that's something where it becomes a bit difficult to argue to clients as well, because we assume that, I know that not from myself, but from colleagues who worked in the car industry, that even though the car has already everything on board to produce sound, if you just need a single chip to make some sort of processing, because it's so high numbers of production, it has to be so super cheap and everything is so balanced out, and it's actually harder than you might think to add something smart on the sound level. You really have to push for it and advocate for the benefit of sound, of good sound design and good interactive adaptive sound design in products to get these budgets and the assignments as well. So that's not always so easy.
Yeah, I know when it comes to automobiles, it's one of those things where the cars themselves are a sound.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you the engines, yes, but the inside of the car is tuned so that when you're listening to something in the radio, in the MP3 player, whatever the thing is you're plugging in, all of the sound system is, depending on the cost of the car, some of them are better than others, but that sound is tuned. It's made so that the higher end the car is, the better that sounds. The more of a interactive, spatial sound you get. And even the way that a car door slams is a different sound.
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah, there's so much, and the car industry is huge.
Yeah, it's huge. And it's also in a huge, it has some huge challenges as well to face. The electric vehicle actually started a lot of new interest in the sonic dimension, of course. But cars are super interesting from a design perspective, because they are very controlled environments. On one hand, right? So the manufacturer can perfectly control every aspect of this space where 1 to 5 people sit inside, and they won't move. You know, it's even easier than a cinema. I always say the cinema is really like, you know, it's actually there are only probably 5 or 10 seats that have good sound in a cinema. The Dolby seats or the THX seats.
That's, why do you say that? Is it a particular space that they're in, or they're designed that way?
No, this is the reference point for the sound system, because the cinema sound system is of course it's centristic still, you know, or like, how to say, it's balanced, it's symmetrical, left right, but also front back. It has a clear direction, and there are some seats in the cinema that are the reference listening spots.
I see.
For
okay.
THX, Dolby, whatnot. And
I gotta ask now, which ones are those? Is it different in any theater? Is it like each theater has a different one, or is it like
I guess it is
the second center, or like where?
Probably depends on the architecture of the space, right? So how long and high and wide it is, and with Atmos this maybe has decreased a bit this necessity, but I think still it's there. I think I'm the wrong person to ask this guy. I'm not so much into these regulations.
I was just curious. But I don't mean to put you on the spot.
No, it's okay. But it's just compared to the car where you have a much tighter control of
sure,
where people
yeah.
sit. And you can, it's much harder to get this wide sound field. But on the other hand, you have a much easier way to address points in space inside this car.
Yeah.
And also,
it can feel much more personal.
Yeah. And you close the door, and modern cars are really well isolated. So you can really differentiate very much from signal to noise, and noise being the outside world in this case.
I can tell you from a voice actor's point of view, if I'm traveling and I want to record something, I do it in my car.
All right. Okay.
So yeah.
Yeah, for well-isolated car.
Yeah.
And that
helps.
And that's also generating problems because you don't perceive the outside world anymore. You don't hear the cyclist. And they are actually, they are both in research and design, they are attempts to, for instance, with microphones, to bring the outside world into the car again. In a controlled way with some noise shaping or signal shaping, and of course also computers on wheels. That's another aspect. That's something that we did with the interaction design students some years ago with this German car manufacturer. We explored ways of communication about alarms, and even stuff, crazy stuff like tire pressure, how much gas is left, or how much energy juice is in the battery. You know, that all ideas such as that the sound of the car changes based on the way I press the gas pedal. So if I'm too aggressive, the sound can actually tell me, make me feel that, oh, now you're overdoing it. Like, that's again what a film sound designer would do. In a science fiction film, I would definitely design the sound different if the person was angry and aggressive and go like, you know, and if it was smooth, then you go like, zhoo, zhoo, you know, like this. And why not taking such ideas also, you know, to support economic driving, for instance, to make it a sonically more round, pleasurable experience to not put the pedal too much to the metal.
That makes total sense. I guess it would be easier with electric cars, though, because then you can regulate the sound of the engine a lot more.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, you wouldn't know to do that on a regular car.
Yes,
it's a little harder.
Yeah. So cars are super interesting. Yeah.
Hi, this is Will Seabrook, and you're listening to the Audio Branding Podcast, a great place to learn about how powerful sound can be. If you want to understand how to harness that power in your own life, keep listening.
They really are.
And also, last point maybe, because like to talk about this.
It's fine. Go ahead.
You know, already in a cycle, you have the bell, and in the car, you have the horn. And if you go to, I don't know, in Europe, I don't know, in Canada or the States, how the honking culture is. But for instance, I know from films from Tati and French producer or France or Italy, it's known for this kind of expressive horn culture. So people, there are traffic signs and lights, but I don't know. They're just more general indications.
They're guidelines.
They're guidelines.
Yeah.
But the rest is really communication. And you go like, the horn is not just out of the way. It's also, I'm here. Watch out. I'm coming from the right. And if you honk differently, if you honk to a pedestrian.
And it depends on the car too, because every car has a different honk sound, right? And
yes.
The larger the car, it tends to be the louder the honk.
Yeah.
That's one of the things, right? In North America, we have a lot of space for our cars.
Mm.
So the cars tend to be larger.
Mm.
And that means that a lot of the honking tends to be louder. And I don't know that there's as much of a honking culture as there would be in Europe. I think it's probably a language in places like New York. I know downtown Toronto has its share. But yeah, it depends. I remember I had a little Pontiac Firefly when I was younger, and it had the most dinky little horn. It was like you were going, excuse me, every time you hit it. It was ridiculous.
Oh, cute.
So no point in using it.
Yeah. It's like...
But
that's funny.
It's
about communication, right?
It's
again about communication. And the lack of communication nowadays in the big SUVs, you are really detached from the environment, and also it's hard to communicate to your environment about your presence and so on. And with the electric engine, you appear out of nowhere, more or less. And so there is a lot of potential still.
That is interesting too. I was speaking with a fellow on this podcast not too long ago, Johan Lukemeyer, I believe.
Oh,
is
yes.
His name.
I've seen at least part of that episode.
Johannes. He's a really interesting guy, and he's been designing sounds for electric cars. So if you could get your electric car to sound like a space car,
he has a system where you can implement your own sounds. I actually love this story. I loved how he was hacking the Tesla that he bought. I really remember this one. It was really cool. It was really interesting.
Yeah. So there's so much you can do with the electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. That would hopefully announce their presence rather than having them sneak up on you. I think he mentioned that they did not end up making a rule that your car needed to make certain amount of sounds.
It depends on where you are in the world. In Europe, at least by now, I knew it from Japan, but also in Europe, they have this regulation that from 0 to 30, you have to have some noise generator. So even Teslas have since, I don't know how many years, but eventually they started to make a noise as well. But it's actually just some shaped noise, probably not white noise, but some shh.
So you can just tell something's coming.
Yeah, and other cars are trying to do anything between combustion engine and spaceship.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so fascinating that you could have your car sound like it's out of the Jetsons. I just thought that was amazing. So much fun. But I want to move on to just what you're excited about for the future. So when it comes to sound design and interactional design and in what you're putting out into the world, what are you excited about? What will the future bring, do you think?
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about AI now.
I talk about it a lot here. That's what I thought.
We have a project, a research project in the pipeline on AI supported tools for sound designers, which are it's definitely a theme and interesting. But what I'm most excited about is actually what I'm doing now in the health sector, but which could also transfer to other sectors, is advocating more for bringing design to sounds of our everyday life, which is so designed. We have even IKEA, you know, the whole, let's say, people are actually very sensitive to good design. They understand intuitively what is a good design, well-designed chair, well-designed car, well-designed clothing, and so on, and kitchen appliances. Of course, you're not talking about the price thing, which is another factor, but in general, I would say there is a sensitivity to design in a formal and visual and so on aspect, but not in the sonic domain. And I actually, that's something that keeps me on the toes since many years. I also worked in music education for quite a while. And what interested me there was sound education. Because I believe, my theory is that the discrepancy in the standing of sound as an element of design versus other aspects of design has partially to do with how we all are socialized and educated in this field. Because in music education school, we learn a lot about in technical education or the arts in school already in the young age. We learn to draw, we learn to see something and then make a sketch. We learn a lot of basic techniques, and we learn about the golden cut. We learn about all this stuff in school. In the sonic domain, we only learn about music. So I don't want to diminish the quality or the value of that. But
no, not at all.
That's not sound, right? It's a segment of sound. And it's a very often, of course, it's a very small segment of a canon of Western composers. And we all learn major, minor, and so on. So we learn the same stuff. But we don't learn about the soundscape. We don't learn about the noise of the squeaking door. How do I describe this? And so on. So, and that's, for me, one of the reasons why we need really to advocate for sound, but not in an elitistic way. It's not the big cinema thing, which is fascinating and has its place. But for me, what is fascinating is empowering people to talk about sound and to co-create at least sounds for their workplace, for their everyday lives. And that's in the health domain is very specific. There is a very specific field where I'm able to thankfully able to do this kind of work now by working with nurses and with doctors and discussing on how sound could be changed for their workplace. And my interest or what fascinates me is to come up with ways of doing that together in a participatory way, which in design is a pretty established method to do it together with people. But in sound, it's still usually the guy, unfortunately, but the person, female, male, sitting in the dark basement doing some magic, pressing some buttons, and then something comes out that you like or you hate. And this is that, it's not it, right? So, I mean, if we compare that to how the standing of design in other places, the proud chest, you know, that design can have, that's really what interests me. And that's also a motivation for co-leading this sound design master program, because part of our education is really not just getting our students to become professional sound designers, producers, engineers, but also to sensitize them on how can we work with non-experts, with people in the field, how can we discover opportunities for sound in everyday lives that nobody thought about, and how can we actually communicate and present our ideas and pitch them so that we get funding, we get either research funding or company funding, industrial funding, to realize how to make a change. So this is what really, that's where I think the future should go, at least. It's not very flashy. It's not high tech, but this is really what drives me. Yes.
Yeah. Well, yes. We need more of that. And to that point, I am curious how you think sound design can become more inclusive, because you mentioned earlier that it was very westernized, what we were taught in schools. And I mean, how do we diversify that? How does that improve?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Are you enjoying this podcast? If so, it would really help me out if you'd give it a review. The best place to do that in written format is at the bottom of the audiobrandingpodcast.com page. And if you want to do that in voice format, there's a link in the ending paragraph at the top of that same page. I would so appreciate that. It helps me to know what you'd like to hear more of and why you're listening in the first place. As podcasters, we rarely know who's actually listening, so it helps me to know that I'm not just speaking into the void. Thanks for that. And now, back to the show.
We have to unlearn a lot of things. That's a term that I also take from I'm also teaching sound studies. So critical approach to sound theory that is not technically founded, but more in the studies of cultures. And that definitely includes today, nowadays, as the global south and cultures that were excluded, colonially excluded or appropriated by Western culture and homogenized, so to say, so that films sound the same everywhere nowadays, so more or less, or very similar, the mainstream film. But it's definitely about that as well, to learn about these other worlds of sound and realities, and also to make clear to everybody that they can articulate their own sound experiences freely and empower them also to maybe make sounds in a way, you know, with simple tools. I was in a project once where during Corona, which actually was enabling a lot of exchanges that before were nobody thought about, because everybody had these video chat softwares all of a sudden, right? And it was so easy. All of a sudden, everybody was like, oh, wow, why don't we just make a workshop with somebody in Japan and in South yeah. America and Australia and New Zealand?
Zoom makes everything possible.
Yeah, the only time is the last remaining yeah. issue, right?
Yeah.
So finding those time frames. But then we did, for instance, a series of workshops where people just brought their own sounds from their environment. Everybody was in shutdown, right, or lockdowns. So they could only, they could not go out, but the microphone of their mobile phones in that case, or if they had of their recorders, could help them to reach out, right? And you would hear, and sound can transport you far away, like the distant sound, a wind, a bird, and so on. But also inside you discover so many new sounds that you never realized. And in that sense, COVID was really... a blessing, so to say, because at least for us in the arts, it's for many people it was terrible and horrifying. But if anything came out of it, there was a certain sensitivity and sensitization to the little sounds that we never noticed. And we did some work around that, and people just shared those sounds, and they had so many different backgrounds sonically. We had everything from sound engineers to people who never had a microphone in their hand before consciously. Of course, we have a microphone all the time when we make a phone call, but you know what I mean. So, and that was amazing, right? Because it kind of leveled the play field. All of a sudden, we were on the same level of talking about these sonic experiences, and it was not so important anymore how much you knew already about the topic. And that was super interesting. And that's also when we realized that this is an advantage of sound over visual, the visual domain. In that case, the missing education can be an advantage. In the visual domain, everybody, we have advertising, we have visual communication, we have pictography, we have all kinds of visual languages that are established and normative, so to say. They tell us how to think. Or to think of a certain image, right? In sound, especially if it's non-musical, this is often missing. We have to come up with something. We hear that strange squeak and we are, what is this sound? And this question, what is this sound? That is opening up doors. That was so great. I mean, and if we can get this experience that people meet on ear level, not eye level, but ear level, and start to talk about their sonic experiences and then turn that into design action. Make them create something with that in some way.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Well, I'm glad you had that experience because probably you experienced a lot of sounds that you had never heard before. So.
Absolutely. Yes. So yeah. Really where everybody was on eye or ear level in that sense. Yes, absolutely.
That's really great. Yeah. I have one more question for you. And I want to ask you if you could leave one message about the power of sound for future generations, what would you tell them? I know it's a big question.
Yeah. It's, you mean in general or?
I mean in general. It's kind of a philosophical question almost.
Yeah, it's the power of sound is that it you have to listen to not only perceive it, but to really hear and understand it. And sound, the power of sound can be, especially of sounds that seem unfamiliar or new or curious, they open up your ears in a way that makes you also open for the other people, for the other human beings, and maybe also non-human beings, right? Through listening, and that's the power of sound, we can learn about the world and the world around us in a new way. And I think, and that's actually not maybe a new message even, but it has maybe become more relevant, or it has got a new relevance in the present time, I think, to listen.
It definitely has. Yes.
Yes.
Thank you so much for your perspective on this. It's been a fabulous conversation, and I'm looking forward to sharing this with other people who will probably agree with very much a lot of what you've said. But I would love to let people know how they can get in touch with you if they'd like to do that. Mm-hmm. Do you have a website, or do you prefer LinkedIn, or?
Maybe the easiest, I have a LinkedIn page. That's definitely a way that I can be reached. I'm not very active on LinkedIn, but I'm passive, very active. So the communication channel works very well. So you can be contacted there. I can also be found on the website of the University of the Arts, Zurich, zhtk.ch. There I have the study sound design where I can be found. And for the researchers that might listen to this podcast, I'm also on ResearchGate. So that's also easy to find me there.
Good to know. Okay. Thank you so much for joining me today, Daniel. I appreciate the time and your definite expertise, because this was a deep dive. And I very much appreciate your doing that for us. Yeah. Thank you for taking us along.
Thank you very much, Jody, for having me. This was a pleasure. Thanks.
Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time.